Central, coming to you live from the Mobile Kintech Studio on location at Rogers Arena, the site of tonight's game between the Canucks and the New Jersey Devils, the Hughes Bowl, as it has been crowned. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar on Sportsnet 650. And as always, get in touch with us on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Loaded show coming up for you today. We are going to chat with our good friend Kevin Woodley. That is coming up at 4:30. Haley Salvian is going to join us at 5. And we'll also get to overrated, underrated at 5:30. So if you have submissions for overrated, underrated, get those into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650, 650. Bick, you're in again for Dan Riccio, who's still on the shelf. Hopefully, yep, we'll be feeling better soon. But, you know, we spent a lot of time digesting what happened last game between the Canucks and the Carolina Hurricanes. And here's another test against the New Jersey Devils coming up tonight. But just before the game, there's some trades happening. We saw a trade go down.
And yesterday, too.
Yes. Well, last night.
Yeah, sorry. Yesterday is last night.
Yeah, I'm saying, well, last night, as in like it
you
was...
You have to get the last word in all the time. right now, just minutes ago, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the San Jose Sharks have made a trade. So Timothy Liljegren is going to San Jose, and Matt Benning, a third-round pick in 2025 and a sixth-round pick in 2026 are going to Toronto.
Yeah, and Frank Saravalli told us on Monday that the Canucks were checking in on the trade market, defensemen that were available, and only a couple of days later, two D-men got traded. So that brings us to the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Ah! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It is the Open, and today's big story, we're starting with the trade we just mentioned off the top, because it's a sign of things percolating around the National Hockey League and also the Vancouver Canucks, who clearly have a need on the back end and have been getting some good mileage out of a new acquisition in Erik Brännström. But beyond that, they were still looking to improve the blue line. And the reason, Bick, I said last night is because in under 24 hours, we've seen two defensemen get traded, and there aren't many other defensemen available. Ole Mato, you mentioned, goes from the Devils to the Utah Hockey Club for a third, and Liljegren goes to San Jose.
From Detroit, sorry. The Devils are in town.
Devils, right. I meant the Red Wings Devils. Yeah. I always get them mixed up. But anyways, Mata to Utah for a third, and Liljegren goes for a third as well. And that's kind of the price for a dependable defenseman, I suppose, right?
I just love that the people be like, oh, I'm in Detroit today. Well, actually, it looks like New Jersey.
Well, it's the red jerseys. That's the thing that gets me, right? Red Wings, Devils. That's, I always get them like in my head.
I'm pretty pumped up. Man United beat Chelsea today.
No, they didn't.
They're playing Leicester. They wear blue. Chelsea wears blue.
Well, United won a match today. That's really good. Chelsea, however, not so well against Newcastle.
It's just color palette.
Yeah, it is. Well, black and white is like, I hate the pinstripes. I hate Newcastle. Anyways.
Newcastle playing the World Series?
St. James's Park is a tough place to play, man. But yes, so a couple of trades have gone down. And I would imagine the Canucks, at the very least, were around both players, because we know this front office, anytime a player is available, they check in to get an idea of what the price is and what it looks like. Clearly, whether it's fit or price or whatever, they didn't feel like it was necessary to go out and get either of these players, or at least give up what they were required to acquire. A third-round pick, it seems, for both these players, right? Now, Benning has another year left in his contract at over $1 million. Is this just money going out the other way? Mm-hmm. So essentially, you're talking about a third round pick ish.
Both trades feel like a third round pick. The Red Wings trade was the Rangers pick going the other way.
Very late third.
It could be a late third in that scenario. We're talking about a Toronto third paired with the sixth, a future sixth, and money moving. Maybe that's an early third or a late second, however you want to, you know, do the draft pick charts and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of where it is.
But it's not an expensive price. If you're looking to add a blue liner, there are a couple guys to be had for a relatively cheap price. The Canucks paid a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick to acquire Nikita Zadorov last year, around the same time. It was November when they pulled the
trigger.
That
was late November, yeah.
Yeah, when they pulled the trigger with the Calgary Flames to acquire him. So very similar price overall here for a defenseman available. The reason I think the Canucks didn't pull the Liljegren deal now, I'm not sure it's just about the price. I think if the Canucks made the Liljegren trade, it pretty much would have taken up all their flexibility as far as cap goes and as far as where they would be looking to add at the deadline. You could probably talk me into Liljegren, but from an organizational standpoint, they probably value the flexibility more than making that acquisition today.
Well, I think the conversation, we'll have it throughout the course here, but you know, both D-men that got moved are $3 million.
Yeah.
And you really just kind of look at the you know, how much of this was solving issues, basically?
Well, I think so. Liljegren, Mata, to me, I you have Forsberg, even what Brännström has shown. I'm not as keen on the Mata
but
thing.
I just mean for those teams, right? Like Utah had an urgency to want to do it.
Yeah, they
and
long-term
Detroit,
injuries.
They're looking at it and they're like, we got Sider, we got Sherratt, we got Hull, we got Petrie, we got Gustafsson, we got Edvinson, who's, you know, you and I were chatting about him the other day, that he feels like he's starting to take a growth step at 21. Do we really need a $3 million depth D-man? Mm-hmm. Let's just resolve this. You might not play a lot. Liljegren, we know he's played one or two games so far this year. Let's just resolve that. And so if those teams had different motivations at this time, rather than, let's say, a month from now, like the Zadorov trade last year.
Well, and it's kind of like the same with Zadorov was also a situation where there was a team felt like we had to make this move. Now, he wasn't available just because, you know, the Canucks came knocking. And they wanted to resolve that issue as well. So it was a similar situation insofar as here's a player available in a tenuous situation for a cheaper price than it would normally cost to acquire him. He does have one more year left on his contract. And the ultimate question is, do you think Liljegren would have answered solved your problems as far as a puck-moving defenseman and a guy that can perhaps play up into your top four? Now, Liljegren is not a big, small player. Mm-hmm. He's 6 feet, 6'1", almost 200 pounds. He's not a tiny defenseman by any stretch of the imagination. But he doesn't scream Rick Tocchet defenseman. At the same time, neither does Brännström, and he's been very complimentary of how he's played. Ultimately, did they miss the boat on a potential top four defenseman that you could have got for a far cheaper price than you normally would, given the profile?
All right, I'll put it this way. If 35 minutes ago you asked me, hey, would you want to make... If the Liljegren trade was available to you right now, do you want to make it? I would probably say no. If you asked me in July, prior to the Mark Friedman signing... Or sorry, the Vincent Desharnais signing, because that's $2 million dedicated, would you have paid 10% more in July, or would you have been willing to pay 10% more in July to get Liljegren as the sixth guy, or rather go with the Desharnais route that they chose? Because that I would rather do.
Yeah, I mean,
I would rather pay 10% more 3 months ago than I've made the trade today, given the reality of what you're in.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, for instance. Like, if you compare it to that, I don't disagree.
I don't really get why Toronto went down this road, be like, oh, we're going to keep Liljegren.
And then
game in, it's like, oh, okay, let's just trade him for... probably 70 on the dollar.
Yeah, and I think you could have got more for him. And to be honest, given how he wasn't being used at all and the fact that he has another year on his contract, I thought he would be go for even cheaper than what he ended up going for, a third-round pick. I thought maybe a fourth or a fifth would get it done, considering the situation Toronto found themselves in. But I think the reason this happened, too, is San Jose...
They got cap space.
They have cap space. They have a team that's only won two games so far. Now, they're won two
probably,
in a row.
And they probably want to and they probably want to make bets like this, right?
They do, yeah. And he has another year on his contract, so I get it.
They
for Vancouver?
Won two in a row.
But like, and hey,
rebuild
what,
over.
What's say that Liljegren doesn't get traded again by the deadline?
Sure.
Probably for maybe more than what they paid to acquire him. But I think for Vancouver, the more I sat and looked at the trade market, honestly, like, I talked myself into Liljegren being a decent option because there aren't many other names available. And if you look at the price of acquisition, it wasn't really crazy, right? So I would say what we have to look at is what Vancouver ends up doing trade-wise between now and the trade deadline. And do they end up getting somebody who's going to be a better player for them than what a player like Liljegren would be? Now, I know there are
people... The other part of the conversation is it... a big enough upgrade, right? It's probably a credible NHL body.
Well, yes,
but is it a big enough upgrade for what they need? It fits a style that they the need of being a puck mover. Yes, but is it more important to get someone that can play on the second pairing and move a Myers down or a Soucy down, or is it about just getting another real body? Because I think they can solve the real body, because Brännström giving you credible minutes here, and that's another body.
I think the handedness is the big part. This text here, I don't disagree, says, other than being a right shot, Liljegren isn't any better than Brännström. He has been better defensively than Brännström has been. Like, Liljegren isn't a player who's horrible defensively. It's kind of strange how he's really fallen out of favor the past couple of years, because he's shown he can play. Well, you're making a projection where you're hoping he's going to be a top four guy. Because if you're just getting him to be a third pair guy and you pay him $3 million next year, is that really good? Is that a good way to spend your money? Especially if, say, next year you're looking at Willander playing in your third pairing coming up.
If you're in Vancouver, it's probably not the right spot. In general, from a team, like, it makes sense for San Jose.
Yeah, for those.
You know, it really depends on how you build your blue line, right? If you don't have a stud and you just want six decent guys, there's plenty of teams that would look at that and say, hey, we don't have our number one guy, but let's just attack it truly by committee because you don't have a Norris guy. You could make sense in that world and have a Lily Green on your third pair at $3 million.
And I think the other part of this too, though, Vic, is when you look at how the Canucks blue line has played so far, we know Hughes and Hronek. I mean, no concerns there, right? I know Myers has his ups and downs, but Myers is Myers, and I think in the playoffs he'll be fine. But he is what he is, right? I don't think anybody expects him to be this number three or true number four. It's more of a, you know, 4-5 type of guy, and he gives you more value come playoff time. Carson Soucy last year really showed to be an important part of this team, and he was playing, you know, fewer minutes. It was under 18 minutes a game because he had guys like Zadorov and Ian Cole playing big minutes. But in every role he was, especially in the postseason with Myers, he was really good for this team. He's struggled so far this year. And when the Canucks are looking at adding somebody, how much do you think they're also looking at somebody that they can truly depend on defensively to play a matchup role, play in a tough situation? Whereas Liljegren is a guy that you like, but it's a projection. And he's not going to be a matchup type of guy. And if you have any concerns about, you know, having another good defensively dependable player, does that kind of tell us the profile of player that they may be looking at more than anything else? Especially if Branson can provide that puck movement for them.
Yeah.
Are they looking to add somebody that can do what Soucy did last year, or perhaps do what Ian Cole did last year for them, but on the right side?
Yeah, and, you know, we've had this conversation about, you know, profile of guys. It's not even about talent assessment of who makes sense, because I think we'd sit here and say, you know, someone like Branstrom has significantly more natural talent than a Derek Forbert. But what makes sense for Vancouver? You don't need more power play guys, right?
Yeah.
You have Hughes. If there's an injury, Hronek can fill in the power play. If there's an injury there, Branstrom can fill in the power play. That's the third option in that scenario, right? When you're assessing the bottom four D-men, you have to evaluate, can this guy truly go out on the penalty kill for us?
Yeah, I mean, Forbert's the guy, right? Like, Forbert and Soucy, those two are the guys. On the right side, do you have somebody that you feel like can play top 4 minutes for you if Myers goes down? You really don't.
You really don't.
Because we know Juulsen is what he is, but he's, you know, very good as far as a 6-7 goes. We know Desharnais, he's nowhere near being a player that, you know,
solve playing third pairing minutes before
exactly.
You play top 4 minutes.
Exactly. So there isn't any internal options here on the right side that can move up the lineup, especially play a tougher role. And I know we mentioned Carson Soucy's a lefty more than anything, but if you had Soucy playing at a high level with Myers, I think it would make you feel less of a need to go after a certain type of player. Now, it's early in the season. I think Soucy's going to come around and be a lot better for you. But when you look at the profile of players again and how this organization has prioritize going after players that fit a certain mold.
Which is why, again, going back to my point of doing it in July, I understand why the Desharnais move was made, because if the project works, then you have something that fits the mold of what you need, right? And he does have PK ability even now. He is functional on the penalty kill. The thing is, just going back to the Soucy thing, it is... I wish it was just like one thing that felt like it was like, oh yeah, that'll smooth out, that'll get corrected, because he was so good last year. But you look at the thing that like he's good at right now, just trying to find any measure of, oh yeah, like this is something you can hang your hat on. You would probably just say, oh well, you know what, right now, like he's blocking a lot of shots, right? Per 60,
yeah.
He's about 50th. I like looking at within one numbers with in game states within one goal, and he's about top 50 in that spot. Like, okay, but we know now intellectually that a lot of blocked shots can speak to a bigger problem, right?
You're spending a lot of time in your own zone.
You're spending a lot of time in your own zone. So you think, okay, is he giving the puck away? Yeah, he actually is. He's giving the puck away at a decent amount, too. He's top 50 in that. Are you taking it away? He's not really. He's out of the top 150 in that per 60. Is he getting a lot of hits? He's out of the top 150. It's all these factors are bleeding into each other that you're not taking the puck away. You're not separating the man from the puck with hits. You're giving it away, and you're in your zone a lot. Now, hey, thankfully, some of it is corrected by shot blocks, but it's not as if he's a high-volume shot blocker that turns into offensive chances right now. It's not Hanev, right, that he can block a shot, still move the puck, and do everything. Like, the struggles are really real right now with Carson Soucy.
They are, and for that pair in general, too. And I think a lot is going to really hinge on how they turn things around in terms of us really finding out the type of player that they go after. I see people texting in Stevie and Langley saying, what about going out and getting Rasmus Anderson? Well, Frank Cervalli was on with Halford and Bruff today and mentioned at the moment, the Flames have no intention of trading Rasmus Anderson. And if the Flames feel like they're any closer to contention, they're going to look to lock him up. And if he wants to stay in Calgary, yeah. Like we talked about, guys, defensemen are very hard to find. And if a team feels like they're in any sort of competitive window where they feel like they have a guy that they can keep, they're going to try to keep that player. And well, maybe the and Rasmus Anderson situation changes, but come deadline, if the Flames, you know, tailspin and the reality of their fate becomes a lot starker and they have to take a longer-term approach, then maybe something changes. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rasmus Anderson signs an extension this summer as opposed to him getting traded.
Sure.
Like, I think there's as good a chance, if not better, of that happening as opposed to him getting traded. But he's obviously the biggest player that you talk about and look at. But so far, we just don't have enough high-end guys being available to begin with. And that's what makes it super intriguing moving on from this point as far as what the Canucks do on the trade market. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Like this one says, someday you'll get around to stating the Canucks should have just kept Zadorov instead of paying for two bottom UFAs at $3.5 million. So in Forbert and Desharnais. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. That may turn out to be very right.
I think hang on. That money doesn't add up.
No, it's $3.5 million, but with the cap space you still have, five, you can make it work, right? Like,
I still think you're going to see a very good Derek forward. He just hasn't been in the lineup for some time, and you know the limited cameo that we saw. It's a credible Ian Cole impression.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. We'll see how that all goes. Now, as far as the matchup tonight goes between the Vancouver Canucks and the New Jersey Devils, we get to see a bit of a rematch of two of the best players to get drafted in the 2017 NHL entry draft. One guy went fifth overall, and the other guy went first overall.
The Hughes Bowl. This is the 2017 Bowl.
Exactly, right? We'll talk about the Hughes Bowl for sure, but Nico Hischier versus Elias Pettersson tonight.
We chatted with Ken Danico yesterday, and I was excited to ask him about Hischier, and he gave us a great answer about it. You know, I really feel like Hischier's maybe taken the Barkov mantle away, because now Barkov's won a cup. He doesn't need to be talked about. Oh, the most underrated player you're not watching. And you think about the Devils, you think about the Hughes brothers, obviously. They got a big spender in Timo Meier. They got a fun player in Jesper Bratt. And yet, a first overall pick gets like no acclaim on this team. He's the captain of it, too. And no one really spends a lot of time talking about Nico Hischier. And so, you know, he's such a smart defensive player. Now he's scoring goals. He's leading the league in goals.
9 goals in 12 games.
I'm not saying, you know, if you redid the 2017 draft, what would it look like? But I think suddenly here in their age 25, 26 season, like he's kind of bridged that gap all of a sudden that if you're Elias Pettersson thinking, hey, I was the best forward in this draft. There's a picture of Nico Hischier in your rearview mirror, and the objects are closer than they appear.
Well, I mean, he's never going to put up the point totals that Pettersson put up. Like, even this year, he's got the 9 goals, it's 3 assists, it's still 12 points. The high watermark for him is an 80-point season. But I like how you framed him as maybe being the next Barkov as far as the most underrated player in the league that's a two-way force that doesn't get enough credit for how much he does away from the puck and how good he is in other areas. Plus, he's a super fast player.
He was second in Selke voting 2 years ago.
And he's super fast. He's got a lot of pace to his game. I think it would have been very obvious to just say Pettersson, though, the last couple of years. And hey, ultimately, we're talking about this now when Pettersson's at the low point of where he's playing.
But one guy is ascending.
And the
one thing I would say, too, for all the Pettersson doubters that, you know, I'll throw him an olive branch here. You know, we always just talk about a player, a star-level players, too, get better at one thing every year.
Yeah.
Like, what is the one thing you look at for Pettersson this year? Now, I know it's been tough, right?
It's hard to spot.
Last year, we could have said face-offs, right?
Yeah, because you got 50%
almost. 50%. Well, that's regressed back to now 45% so far this year. But it's getting lost in the big picture conversation of what does it mean for the Canucks and Stanley Cup aspirations, solving Pettersson. But even if it solves, what's the thing that he's gotten better at this year? That's another part of the conversation we'll discuss, hopefully, through November and into December. Whereas his year, okay, now the goals are coming on top of being defensively responsible. You know, fighting for minutes with Jack Hughes, who's thought of as one of the best centers in the league, and it's been a really nice start, and I'm excited to watch him tonight.
Yeah, I really am as well, right? And I think for Pettersson, the thing that keeps coming up is recently the coach talking about him having to plug away at his game, and keeps talking about moving his feet. We know that going back to last year, the knee issue that he spoke about, how much has that impacted? It's hard to tell. Nobody really speaks on those things, but obviously there's something there. But even today was kind of asked about, is Patterson putting in the work to get out of this funk, doing the things he needs to do? And he's like, yeah, in pockets. So there's clearly a need to do more here. Now, how much of that is, you know, you feel like you're not 100% or whatever it is, but there's clearly a need to do more. And right now, you compare it to a guy, like I said, Hischier, who's ascending, it makes it look not as great in the moment, but these things change so fast. The other thing Danico told us yesterday about Pedersen, he's like, yeah, I see him struggling, but I'm sure he's going to figure it out. This happens with these guys all the time. And he mentions watch him in 20 games, and you'll probably see. And I think we're all waiting for it.
Form is temporary. Talent is forever.
Yeah. Just sometimes hard to believe when the form doesn't look great.
Yeah.
All right. And quickly, before we get out, let's do the Canucks Central roundup. And really, the only big news is goaltending-wise. Yesterday, of course, the head coach mentioned that Thatcher Demko put together four consecutive good days. And we'll talk to Kevin Woodley about that, who is right now here at the Jim Robson broadcast gondola as well, hanging out with us. He'll chat with us in studio, in the booth, coming up in about 7-8 minutes. But Demko's put together a few good days, which is positive. And also, Artur Shilov is getting the starting as the Devils tonight.
You knew it was going to have to happen at some point, right? And it's now going over 2 weeks for Shilov, which is, you know, a credit to Lankin more than anything, because he had such a good run with the shutout mixed in there. But it had to happen at some point, whether it was San Jose tonight. You just needed to get him in at some point. So excited to see what he looks like after 2 weeks off.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure he's very motivated.
What is Dan Riccio taking time off?
Poor Reach is sick.
I was just texting with Reach today. It's always funny when you're not the last one to fall down with an illness. Now I'm taking shots.
And just wait next week because the pick's gone for like 3 days. It gets around and gets everybody anyways. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, and we'll get to your comments, especially your questions for overrated, underrated, coming up just after 5:30. But Kevin Woodley is next right here on Canuck Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there, Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.